And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil, olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamp to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our dramatic program today was written by John Blahos, The Liquid Fire.
Sam Gomper has lived out his entire lifetime on the side of the toiling, wage-earning masses. The working man was, as he put it, his religion, and he observed it in word and deed all his days. It was said of him that he always made speeches, whether to an audience of one or to thousands. He made speeches because he always had something to say, and what he had to say had meaning for the working man. It was something he learned very early when, as a boy in the cigar factory, he was chosen by the workers as the one to read to them while they worked, that they might also learn as they labored. For that was their custom, and it was Sam Gomper's training ground.
It is for us the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who have fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion.
Making speeches again, Sam?
Yes, Mama, I am.
To yourself? To an empty room?
To myself, Mama. Yes, to an empty room, yes.
You
yes.
should read it to the other cigar makers in the shop when it's your turn to read to them.
It's what I intended, Mama. Tomorrow.
It's a good speech. Perhaps it'll help them to work, to take their minds off the death of that good man, President Lincoln. Well, it seems to have helped you. You've stopped crying, I see.
It is one of his speeches, Mama.
One of his?
Yes.
Will you say it for me?
Yes, I will. 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
As he grew older and went into the labor movement, Sam Gompers continued to make speeches. Though on one or two rare occasions when it was not union business, even he was at a loss for words.
Well, aren't you going to say anything? I never in my life thought I would see the day when Sam Gompers would be speechless.
You think it's funny that I'm to be a father?
Oh, how could I? You know how much I've wanted it. Now, say something. Please, make us both a speech, Sam.
A speech to an unborn child? When the chick is in the nest, when he first carries a Torah scroll on Simchas Torah, then I will make a speech to him.
Well, can't you make one to me in the meantime?
To you?
You made me no speech the day we were married. You didn't even propose. It wasn't even your idea that we get married. Someone else suggested it, and all you did was to be agreeable.
Have I stopped being agreeable?
No. No, you're always that. And you always look after me, as you promised you would. But make me a pretty speech, Sam, please.
You know I have no experience in making pretty speeches. But if that's what you must have, very well, then.
Live joyfully with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun. All the days of thy vanity. I'm sorry, that's the best I can do.
Oh, it was perfect, Sam. It was just perfect.
Before the year was out, young Sam Gompers and his bride were to face the grim realities of the working man's struggle for his rights. Indignant over working conditions, the fledgling labor leader walked off a job for the first time, taking the others in the shop with him. And for a young couple still in their teens, it was a time of trial, a time of faith, and a time of endurance.
Sam?
Yes.
Your boss was here today.
Here? What did he want here?
He came to tell me that you would lose the strike against him.
Is that all?
He offered me $30 a week for 3 months if I would persuade you to give up the union and go back to work.
And what did you tell him?
I offered him a bowl of soup.
What soup?
The one that's always on the stove.
The strike soup you make out of water, salt, pepper, and flour?
Yes.
Did he enjoy it?
Well, I only know he didn't want a second bowl. I made sure, though, that he finished the first.
He said nothing more to you?
Only that I could always change my mind if I decided that I did not want to have a strike baby.
There are better times to have babies, I know. I would not have blamed you, wife.
Well, we will suffer our labor pains together, husband. Now sit while I bring you some soup.
No, thank you. I'm not hungry.
If it was good enough for your boss, it's good enough for you, Sam Gompers.
Very well. Bring the soup.
The year is now 1886. The days of heartbreak and struggle, of fighting for the welfare of his fellow workers, have reached their culmination. We are at the first convention of the American Federation of Labor. The place is Columbus, Ohio. The man speaking is, of course, Sam Gompers.
Hello, working men! All my life, I have been a maker of speeches. But tonight, having joined with you to form a federation of trade unionists, and having been called upon to be your president, I am moved as I have never been moved before. For I am in religion a working man. In every nerve, in every fiber, in every aspiration, I am on the side which will advance the interests of my fellow working men. And I promise here tonight, in every act and in my every utterance, to represent the side of the toiling, wage-earning masses.
Except for a single year, Sam Gompers was elected again and again to the presidency of the AFL, holding that post for the remainder of his life. During that 1 year, and in the years that followed with the turn of the century, Sam Gompers turned his attention and began to work in the interests of international labor, beginning in our own hemisphere with the workers in the Caribbean, in the Dominican Republic, in Cuba, and in 1904... in Puerto Rico.
Sam, Mr. Iglesias is here.
Oh, bring him in, bring him in.
Senor Gompers, we meet at last.
Buenos dias, compadre.
Hey, you speak Spanish?
Only a smattering. In my younger days at Stachelberg's, we had several Mexican and Cuban cigar makers in the shop. I learned a little Spanish from them. But more important, I learned about industrial and political conditions among our Latin brothers.
And now you're doing something about it.
Well, not enough, Senor Iglesias, not enough.
Not enough? Before you took up our cause, we could not organize in Puerto Rico. We had no rights of free speech or assembly. We were nothing, less than nothing.
There is still a long way to go.
Well, perhaps, but we can hardly expect to have all the advantages that American laboring men have.
And why not?
Well, after all, we're just a possession of the United States. We take what is given to us, and we are thankful for it.
That is not enough for me, and it should not be enough for you.
In time, it will come. For now, we are content with your encouragement and financial aid. And the fact that the American Federation of Labor has agreed to charter our unions gives us the inspiration to continue and to fight for whatever rights we can get.
Senor Iglesias, that is settling for second best, and the laboring man is beyond that.
What would you have us do, Senor Gompers? Well, we cannot be like American working men.
Why not?
Well, because we are not American citizens.
Precisely why I asked you to come here, senor.
Well, to make me an American citizen?
You and all Puerto Ricans.
What?
The AFL is going to demand that all Puerto Ricans be given citizenship.
Do you really believe we will get it?
I know it.
Well, I'm sorry, senor. That is too much for me to believe.
Well, perhaps you will believe it after we have talked to the president.
The president of the United States? We have to talk to him.
Well, do you think I brought you all the way up here to listen to pretty speeches from me? Of course we are going to see Teddy Roosevelt.
Now?
He's waiting for us.
Madre de Dios.
Presidents were never a stumbling block for Sam Gompers, and never in his long lifetime was he a stranger in the White House. He went there constantly, not only in the interests of his fellow Americans, but to plead for the downtrodden in other nations. When war threatened with Mexico in 1914, he went again to the White House, this time to see Woodrow Wilson.
Gompers, exactly how many presidents have you hounded about this Pan-American labor notion of yours?
Not so many. McKinley, Roosevelt, and now you, President Wilson.
I see.
But it's not just Pan-American. I like to think of it in bigger terms. As international.
That doesn't surprise me in the least.
Would you be interested in hearing my views on the advantage of an international labor organization?
One thing at a time, please, Mr. Gompers.
Now, you understand, Mr. President, I'm not taking a narrow view. I am speaking in terms of what it could do to foster democratic governments throughout the world and maintain peace, in which I know you have a deep interest.
I do, but first things first.
I am sure you agree with me that no dictatorial government can exist where there are free unions.
Perhaps not. But what happens if labor becomes a political force?
It will not happen here, I assure you. You know I am unalterably opposed to labor parties. There is no place for labor in politics.
Are you trying to tell me that you are not partisan?
For a political party, never. But for a principle, yes. For a political candidate who stands for principles, always.
I'm glad to hear that.
There are certain things that are above party considerations, Mr. President. Child labor, convict labor, cheap foreign labor, sanitary and safety provisions, that is what I am speaking of.
You don't have to make speeches to me, Mr. Gompers.
Well, making speeches is a disease with me, sir. You must forgive me.
I will. On one condition.
Which is?
That you do not press me about the Mexican problem.
But that is the reason I came here.
I'm aware of that.
Well, surely you must realize, sir, that the struggle of the Mexican workers is no different from the American Revolution.
Isn't it, Mr. Gompers?
Well, there are many things that are not in accord with our ideals, perhaps, but you must remember that these are the first crude attempts of a people long accustomed to despotism and the denial of rights. It is the beginning of their exodus from their Egypt.
That may be, but in this instance, there are American interests at stake.
Oil interests? Land and mineral interests, are they more important than a people's freedom?
Oh, come now. You're not going to raise the specter of an international capitalist conspiracy, are you?
Have I ever suggested that, sir? Have I once quarreled with the American system? I am no socialist, and you know it, Mr. President. I believe in the free enterprise system. I have no desire to destroy it or even to change it. What I have ever asked for is a fair share for the worker and decent conditions in the shops. And that is all I seek for our Latin brothers.
Only their governments can ensure that, Mr. Gomper.
And they will. I'm confident they will if there is no outside interference.
You know I am not a believer in gunboat diplomacy.
Well, then why are you considering intervention in Mexico?
Because I have no valid arguments for the American people so long as the Mexican government is holding a single American prisoner.
And that's the only reason you are considering this step?
The only reason.
Then it may not be necessary. I have sent the President of Mexico this telegram.
Oh?
May I read it to you, sir?
Please do.
In the name of common justice and humanity, in the interest of a better understanding between the peoples and the governments of the United States and Mexico, for the purpose of giving them opportunity to maintain peace and avoid the horrors of war, upon the grounds of higher patriotism and love, I appeal to you to release the American soldiers held by your officers in Chihuahua.
And you expect him to heed your plea?
I'm hoping that he will. Not because it is from me, Sam Gompers. We have never met. But he knows that I have led the working men of this country, even as he has led the working people of Mexico, to victory in the revolution. Only because of that am I hoping that he will listen.
Have you had an answer to this telegram?
Not yet. You won't wait for it?
You may never have an answer. And I can't withstand public pressure much longer.
Can you give me at least 48 hours?
I can give it 24. No more, I'm afraid.
That's 12 more than I expected. I'll take it.
Oh, you're incorrigible, Mr. Gompers. Do you know that?
Yes. But since it's my only charm, what can I do?
That still won't get you any more than 24 hours. By tomorrow at this time, Mr. Gompers, or I must act.
I understand. Thank you, Mr. President.
Sam, look, it came.
It came. No.
What is it, Mr. Gompers?
I'd like you to read it, Mr. President.
Oh? In reply to your message, I wish to state that the government in charge has ordered the liberty of the American soldiers whom the Mexican forces took as prisoners at Carrizal. Well, don't stand there looking like the cat that swallowed the mouse, Mr. Gompers. It doesn't state that it was your telegram that brought it about.
No, sir, that's true. It does not.
In fact, it could just as easily have been the movement of American troops to the border, or the steaming of American battleships in the Gulf.
That is true also, Mr. President, but since no one can say for sure, I'll just take a rain check on those 24 hours of grace you gave me.
What for?
Well, who knows when I may need them again.
Oh, you are incorrigible, Mr. Gompers.
Yes, sir.
However, I suppose I should be grateful that you became a labor leader and not a lawyer, for I should undoubtedly have had to deal with you on the Supreme Court, and that would have been far worse.
I have been told that I missed my career in not studying law.
You certainly have the mental discipline necessary for it.
Well, that, sir, I gained from my study of the Talmud. There's probably no training in all the world that develops more subtle qualities of mind, that teaches a student to deal with abstract problems, to make careful discriminations, to follow a line of reasoning from premise to conclusion.
It is certainly an admirable quality.
Thank you, sir.
However, that is not to say that I do not still consider you incorrigible. You understand?
I understand. Goodbye, Mr. President.
Oh, Mr. Gompers.
Yes, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Time and again, Sam Gompers was called by President Wilson. In 1918, he was chosen by the president to go to Versailles as labor's American representative, there to set up a world labor organization that he dreamed would come out of the treaty that was to be signed.
Sam, I must speak to you.
One moment, please. I'm preparing my statement to the peace conference. Would you care to hear it?
Sam, I have a message for you.
Well, very well. Let's have it then, eh?
It is not good news. It's personal. It's your family.
My family? Who?
Your daughter, Sadie.
She's sick?
She's dead, Sam.
Dead? Well, she's a young woman. How could she be dead?
It was the flu.
But I just had these letters from her. She was singing for the soldiers at all the army camps back home.
Well, the flu has reached epidemic proportions in the States. It happens quickly. Sam, you're all right.
Our home was always full of mirth and music. People of a musical town would come to our home for an evening of pleasure because, well, she was there, would sing for them. Now there will be no more music in the house.
Sam Gompers never quite recovered from his daughter's death. In the meantime, the failure of the Senate to ratify the Treaty of Versailles with the International Labor Organization he had worked to make reality in no way dampened Sam Gompers' efforts. He continued to work for hemispheric accords. And in November of 1924, though tired and ailing, he went to Mexico to attend the Pan American Labor Congress.
Sam, the Mexican delegates are waiting.
What is it?
The Mexican delegates are waiting.
Oh, very well. I'll join you in a moment.
Oh, Sam, haven't you done enough? We should never have come to Mexico. Let us go home. You're much too tired.
At the moment, I am tired, but at other times, you know, there comes over me a feeling like liquid fire. Yes, like liquid fire. And as it courses through my veins, a yearning to work, to be of service. It's gone at the moment, but it will come back.
Well, in the meantime, let me send the Mexicans away. You can speak to them tomorrow.
No. We came here to talk about a Pan-American Federation of Labor. Now, this is important. It can be a stepping stone to real international accords. It may even make up for our failure at Versailles.
It was not your fault that the Senate rejected the treaty with the labor program you helped to formulate?
At least we managed to bring about an international labor organization. That at least remains from Versailles. And now that we have real solidarity in this hemisphere, we can look to Europe again. And we will. You hear me? We will.
Yes, yes, but give it time, Sam.
Time? Who has time? The Pan-American Federation of Labor is just a step. A step in the right direction, but it is still only part of the larger dream we've had. And it will come only if we work at it. But we must work at it.
But you can't do it all, Sam. Not alone.
No, but I can try. As long as I am able to draw breath, I must try. I must continue to fight.
Sam!
Get a doctor! A doctor for Mr. Gompers!
Sam Gompers did not live to see his dream of international labor solidarity come true. But the work he began goes on. In far-flung, underdeveloped areas, Sam Gompers' dreams of Pan-American unity and internationalism have become reality in the Alliance for Progress and the work of the United Nations. The spirit of Sam Gompers prevails wherever men labor. For it was the spirit of total dedication set afire in his mind and heart when as a boy he studied the Talmud. For there can be found these words: "It is not thy duty to finish the work, but thou art not at liberty to neglect it."
If you would like a copy of today's program, please send your name and address with 25 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York, New York, 10027. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Joseph D. Keenan, Secretary of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Mr. Keenan.
Samuel Gompers was not merely the founder of the American Federation of Labor. He was a man of great foresight and of great compassion. To him, the brotherhood of man was a living concept, a worldwide concept based on liberty and justice for all. You have just heard how Sam Gompers led the AFL to recognize its obligations to less fortunate workers in other lands. What he said in Paris holds good today. In effect, that a free labor movement in every country is the best way, possibly the only way, to ensure a free society in every country as well. This remains the guiding principle of the AFL-CIO, the far stronger labor movement that has grown from the heritage of Sam Gompers. This is the whole thrust of our international program. We offer a helping hand, not a controlling one. We do not preach politics or ideology. We teach the technique of free democratic trade unionism. There is still a long road ahead before the vision of Sam Gompers becomes a reality. There are times when the rise of totalitarian regimes, first the fascists, now the communists, and always the military dictatorships, make the vision seem farther away instead of closer. It is sad but true that in too many nations, the very increase in trade union development is met by the seizure of power by a military dictatorship. And for a time, the vision of universal liberty fades. But for more than a half a century, the American labor movement has been true to that vision. And I have no doubt that it will remain bright in the minds and hearts of our movement until at long last it is within reach. This, I believe, is our greatest legacy from Samuel Gompers.
Thank you, Mr. Keenan. Eternal Light drama today, The Liquid Fire, was written by John Blahos. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Featured today was Ralph Bell as Mr. Gompers. Others in the cast were Mason Adams as Young Gompers, Amy Sedell, Patricia Bruder, Lawson Zerbe, Albert M. Ottenheimer, and House Jameson. The narrator was Lon Clark. Today's program was made possible with the assistance of the George Meany Foundation of the Herbert H. Lehman Institute. We invite you to join us next week when The Eternal Light will present A Different Sameness, written by Virginia Mazur. This is Jerry Damon. The Eternal Light is directed by Kenneth McGregor and presented weekly under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.